It's time for our weekly Fargo Force Coaches Conversation. This week with head coach of the Force, Brett Skinner. Coach, you guys are entering your home stretch as we get into, we approach the Christmas break. Where would you say the team is at currently performance-wise as you guys enter that? I know you had a couple of tough games over the weekend against Chicago, splitting those two matchups. Just kind of give us an overall look as to where you guys think you're at as you enter the month of December.
Yeah, it kind of, as you say that, feels like it's kind of sneaking up on us here as maybe, Christmas hasn't really been on my radar. I don't know if it's just the effort going into getting this team up and running, but I think we're in a fine place. I think a little bit of a yo-yo effect with the wins and losses, but I think there's been consistency in our play. I think Friday, even though we lost, I like two of our three periods, and the third period wasn't really that we played bad. It was Chicago played really well. You know, you're at that game, and, you know, obviously you want to dominate all three periods, but the problem is there's another team trying to stop you from doing that. So, for us, we came out of that game, obviously, with them scoring late, it kind of leaves a bitter taste in your mouth. But overall, as far as our team play, I thought it was fine. And then it showed up again the next night. I mean, obviously, a full 60-minute game, but Chicago's a good team. You know, they're seventh in the East, but they're above 500. I think the East is depth is really showing in their record, especially when they play West teams. So for us, I think we're in a fine place. Definitely a lot of room for growth. With a team that, you know, again, we've talked about, it's not necessarily young, but just lacks a little experience. And, so it certainly gives a little hope for the second half, though.
With that being said as well, you guys are, as you wrap up this pre-Christmas slate, you have five games over a matter of 10 nights, beginning this upcoming weekend on Friday in Muskegon, Friday, Saturday. Then you have the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and two in Fargo, one in Sioux City. Not to get too far into next week, but how do you guys approach this last really five games over a 10-night span, including heading to the state of Michigan? And it's not really a direct way to get there since you're not going to the UP, so you had a couple extra hours of busing onto that. How do you guys approach that, knowing that, well, you're going to get a couple extra days off if the guys are sore? Maybe do you push them a little bit extra, or is it just kind of a normal game plan?
It's not a normal game plan. I mean, you game plan around the travel and all that stuff. The Christmas break doesn't necessarily affect that. Obviously, the nice thing about having a Christmas break on the backside of it is you're not really worried about 3 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now as much, where sometimes a Muskegon trip or a Youngstown trip, you know, you really got to take a macro approach to your planning. But, we're going to get to Michigan, get this weekend over with. And then, you know, it's a quick 3-3, the first tour at home. I think with that last game before break being on the road, sometimes that can help you stay focused. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I just say to the kids, our break starts the 14th. I can't make that date come any quicker. So while we're here, let's be focused, and these games matter. And I think if you can maybe catch someone with one eye on Christmas break, a little bit too soon, then you can take advantage of that. So we'll see. It is a tough time of year with teenagers, though.
Trying to piggyback a little bit off of the trip to Muskegon, hearing that there's a little bit of illness running through the team. It happens every year. Every team deals with it, but this isn't a home weekend. This isn't a quick trip down to Sioux Falls. You guys are going to be on a bus for basically a full day to get there and get back, so you have to leave early. Where are you guys at more or less health-wise when it comes to illness, and how do you navigate that? Because you can't chuck a guy on a bus, of course, if they're under the weather 2 days before a game.
Yeah, it's one of the challenges. You turn on the news and there's influenza going around everywhere, and certainly it's going to affect us, especially, being run down with the kids competing on weekends and playing games. Maybe makes you more susceptible. And then you throw in bus trips and being on top of each other for long periods of time. The challenge for this weekend, like you said, I think like last year we were sick basically the whole month of January, and it felt like every week it was four new guys, which certainly affected our wins and losses. And I had maybe never been through anything that was like that either, where it was just every week it was kind of relentless, someone coming in. And I think last year was influenza A and influenza B. This year it just stinks because we're going to Muskegon, so you gotta make some decisions, you know, basically this morning, where, you know, if these kids aren't ready to get on a bus, you know, and at the end of the day, we, you know, the decision's already been made. We're not going to put them on the bus because we're going to end up with 23 kids that are sick. So, you know, it's roster decisions, bringing affiliates in, you know, maybe picking up an emergency recall somewhere in Wisconsin. You know, it's just part of junior hockey. And, you know, I've been doing this 9 years now, obviously as a player, the same thing happens, or you're, you know, when I was in the American League, there's stuff like this all the time where, you know, you just got a kid coming in and you've never maybe seen him before, and he shows up, maybe plays a couple of games, and maybe you never see him again. I don't know. So it's just, it's kind of the fun of it. Obviously not fun that the kids are sick, but, you know, we'll sort it out.
Coach, when it comes to something like that, bringing up a recall from the NAL, maybe have an emergency recall like you talk about there, how do you kind of get them prepared? Because maybe the system they're playing in at an affiliate is not exactly the same, or is hockey kind of, you know, kind of like basketball in a sense that maybe you don't know the specific calls, but you know the general concepts of these type of offenses or defenses. So is it easier than I think to integrate somebody new, especially maybe just for a weekend series?
Well, you know, like you're hoping that you've planned ahead a little bit, and you have a kid who's maybe been in training camp, and you sent him somewhere close, and he's available to you, and he knows your systems a little bit. You know, that's ideal. And there's kids coming and going all the time. I think from an evaluation standpoint, I'm going to say, hey, like this kid's not, like, he doesn't have to come in and put a Superman cape on and put the team on his back and do anything special given the circumstances. But it's maybe not as, you know, like you're not going to be at your best. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you see it the other way, where a kid comes in and he plays free. And, you know, I sometimes feel like then I slowly chip away at that and get them, you know, built into the structure, and they lose some of, you know, what you liked early. So it's really, you know, it's kind of case by case. Mm-hmm. If I'm being honest, some kids come in and you get their best right away, and, you know, maybe they're more energy and they're all hyped up and excited and they're running guys through the glass. And there's other kids that are a little more timid, and, you know, at first they're a little shy, and then all of a sudden they start to warm up, and maybe it takes them 2-3 weeks. So it's really, you know, there isn't one way that it works out. As far as the systems go, it's, you know, we have a package that we put together, where we're used to doing this, where, you know, it's sometimes there's trades made on a Tuesday or Wednesday. You got to get a kid up and running. Obviously, you know, in my 9 years of coaching anyways, it's not the first time we're going to have to bring kids in for a weekend. So it's not something that we're not prepared for, you know, just from an evaluation process. You're also just taking in consideration, like, this kid's not going to be, this isn't the best you're going to see of them. Mm-hmm. So that would probably be how that situation would play out.
Coach, obviously I always try and touch, you know, kind of pick your brain a little bit, especially when it comes to special teams, just because I think there's a lot more to specials than I really realize, especially as kind of a maybe a somewhat educated fan sitting in the stands or watching on TV. I noticed kind of over the last couple weeks that the penalty kill has been just fantastic over the years, especially under your coaching. And I know it's kind of taken a dip a little bit. And against Chicago in that first game, it was basically the same type of situation. I don't remember the kid's name, but number 11 had those two mm-hmm. goals where he was kind of left unguarded on that one side. Now, is that something that when you look at the film with the guys over the next week, is that something where maybe someone was more out of position, or maybe guys are over-rotating to the far side and they leave that back door kind of open? Or can you explain to me kind of what happened on those couple ones so I can better understand it as a fan?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, obviously, Jimmy Mullen runs our PK, so he's pre-scouting and going over all this stuff. You know, in that situation, there's a few things. One, our PK, you know, at the start of the year was really good. It was really aggressive. But now teams start to figure that out. And you know, when you're, you know, for the first month and a half, 6 weeks of the season, the number one PK, you're going to find, and we went through this 2 years ago, you know, you're getting everyone's best then. Mm-hmm. Like you're getting the most preparation, the you know, like the most attention put to that kind of stuff. So that's number one, where I think our PK's seen a little bit of a dip here in that way. But also it was really aggressive at the start of the year, and now teams' power plays are more organized. You know, you could talk about our power play. Mm-hmm. Got out to a slow start, and now it's been 20% in the last two segments. And we're just more comfortable, more up and running, maybe getting a little continuity. So there's that that they're dealing with. For those specific plays, I think one thing you have for sure when you're looking at your team on a defensive standpoint is also giving credit to the other team. Mm-hmm. Where those were nice plays, and their coach is Scott Gomez, one of the best power play forwards. You know, he's probably on a top 20 all-time power play forward in NHL history. So he's kind of notorious for running a really good power play in his early coaching career. This is his first year in the USHL, but, you know, he's done I've seen a few presentations he's done talking about power play and stuff. So, that's there's challenges there for sure. I mean, I could dissect the play for mm-hmm. sure. I mean, I think when you run a low play, it's there's different philosophies on it too. Like I could talk to my college coach and he would scream at me for doing it one way, and then I could go to a pro team 2 years later and the coach would be screaming for me for not doing that. You know, mm-hmm. So there's certainly different ways at looking at the play, and it's kind of the fun thing, I guess, yeah. about coaching at this level in this age is that, you know, clearly we had the wrong technique at the net front. I don't know if it was tactical, but I thought that our defenseman's technique, and then you get to teach the kid and you get to have him, you know, input. And I, especially in those situations on the PK, it's really important to understand what the kid's read was,
yeah.
where you can pre-scout, show video, but it's also a game, you know, like we have such an overhead view as a fan and as a coach. We're standing here and everything's happening in front of us in a game. You know, it's 5-on-4. They have an extra attacker behind him. Well, you obviously want to have a certain amount of focus on the puck because mm-hmm. that guy is instantly eligible to score.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But also understanding if the puck crosses the midline and it goes to a guy wide open on the back door, he's almost certainly going to score. So it's like this balance of how much attention do I give the guy who's wide open on the backside and leave open the guy with the puck. So it's certainly a paradox a little bit. And it's important to hear the kid's input, their read, yeah. you know, here's something that could help you as far as a technique goes. And honestly, with the kids that were involved, I all really trust and they've done a good job on the PK. I do think that they were nice plays by Chicago, yeah, and well executed, and it ends up looking a little easier than it probably is when it goes like bang 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 in the back of the net and you're like, yep, oh man, that looked easy, why didn't we stop that? And it's, yep, like, well, you know, why don't we do that on the, you know, like it's mm-hmm. it's not as easy as it looks, but certainly give them credit, something that we addressed. You know, obviously it just stinks when, you know, they make a couple nice plays. We had killed off, you know, on the one, a significant portion of the penalty mm-hmm. kill already too, where, you know, it stinks when you only take two penalties. We're a disciplined team, but if a team scores one, it really hammers your yeah. PK percentage. So the same token, it puts less pressure on your PK, overall, which is important, to not take a lot of penalties, but mm-hmm. if you do get scored on and you're only taking two, you know, that's going to crush your percentage. So, you know, overall, we're in a dip on the PK. It's the same kids killing that it was at the start of the year. I think that there's some tactical things that certainly, you know, I'll talk to Jimmy just in my experience in the league of kind of the ebbs and flows of how things go, where, you know, we have to change our focus a little there, you know, but a little bit of it, if I'm being honest too, is him learning, you know, I've had, you know, good PKs in this league, and there's sometimes he says something that I'm like, I don't know, you know, in my experience if that's the way I do it, but kind of let him kind of go through his process mm-hmm. and learn that way. So it's been fun and part of having a new staff. I think we had Carter Creer run it 2 years ago. He had, you know, I was the fourth head coach he had worked for, yeah, and Lammy was a really good PK coach. Ollie was a really good PK coach. So there was a lot of trust there as far as what he'd be able to execute. You know, and he did a really good job. And then Jimmy last year run the PK, and he just did what Carter did, mm-hmm. you know? So yeah. it worked really well, where Jimmy's got some new ideas that he's bringing from other areas that, you know, I don't know as well. So it's, you know, been for me a little bit trying to, delegate and give some trust and allow him to go through his process of learning as well, which I appreciated when I was an assistant coach, when I had a head coach that kind of gave me a little bit of a runway where, you know, I could problem solve on the fly. Absolutely. So I think we'll dial it in here though. We'll figure it out.
Well, you know, it was a great point too, Coach, the fact that when you look at the power play opportunities for the other team, I mean, you are by far and away the least penalized team in the league at just 185 minutes, and I would assume that includes some of the majors or the game misconducts as well. So, I mean, you don't take very many penalties, and then obviously if you get a couple power play goals on a weekend series, well, that's going to affect your percentage a lot. When you look at like this last weekend's series, obviously I got a chance to watch you guys play. I had the game up on Flow Sports, watching you guys down in Sioux Falls on Wednesday with my parents. Once again, I'm just so amazed by the quality of goaltending you guys are getting, because obviously the goal scoring is still kind of coming along. It kind of comes and goes in spurts as you guys have gotten more comfortable with each other. But there are times there are breakaways or other shots you're just like, oh, no, this is not a good situation. It's a two-on-one. It's a breakaway, etc. And Alan and AJ have just been playing, in my opinion, they've been playing out of their minds. I mean, that has got to be a really great feeling, knowing that you got that kind of confidence in those backstops on your team.
For sure, yeah. I mean, AJ's numbers are number one in the league, but his underlying numbers are also number one in the league. So, you know, he's obviously had a tremendous first half for us, and one of the reasons we acquired him in the summer, I think, you know, he was in Madison with Caleb Hale, who made the World Junior team. You know, and I not lost on me completely that, you know, AJ is having a better year than him and Hiles, you know, at the World Junior A's and at the World Juniors, but nonetheless, you know, we're happy with AJ and his development. And when you looked at the numbers last year, you could see what he was capable of, you know, which, you know, we're glad that it's translated over to us, and Lendo had a tremendous first half with us last year, and then he went to World Juniors and had a little bit of a rocky second half, but we knew what he was capable of. So to have two goalies that are in the, you know, the top 10 in the league obviously is a tremendous asset. I also think that having two good goalies is part of that, where we did the same thing with Saluki and Castro mm-hmm. 2 years ago, and Anton, you know, he was goalie of the week three times that year, and Saluki obviously, you know, he went on to play in the World Juniors the next year. He won a national championship. You know, he kind of, you know, we all know Saluki is a good goalie, but having those two, you know, did that set up Saluki to have the tremendous season he had. So as far as the chances we give up with them, I think that a little bit of that goes into our style of play. I think, you know, if you give up a two-on-one or a breakaway, it's not 100% it goes in, but we do try to carry possession and try to make plays in the old zone, and we certainly encourage that. And from time to time, you're going to give up that kind of, you know, bomb of a breakdown kind of play in the old zone, especially this time of year. Like, obviously, towards the end of the year in the playoffs, you want to eliminate those, but it's hard to say, I want you to create offense and I want you to be creative and I want you to make plays. Also, by the way, you have to be perfect and you can't give up any odd man rushes. So, you know, obviously as a coach, that'd be ideal for me, but it's just not realistic, and it's not really the way that I like to go about it. And for me specifically, having good goalies in there that can stop those chances. But again, it's not, if you give up a breakaway, the guy doesn't score every time. It's obviously a higher probability than, you know, your 5-on-5 play. But nonetheless, you know, we're not sitting here encouraging giving up breakaways, but, you know, it is a little bit of a part of, you know, the way we want to play. And we did that 2 years ago, you know, where we led the league in goals for, and we were first in the league in the least amount of goals given up. But teams would come watch us play in like our ozone, and they're like, don't you give up a break every now and then? I was like, yeah, for sure. You know, we do, but, you know, it's the tipping point of possession where, you know, we still feel like if we play the way we do, we're going to have the puck on our stick more. And I think even the difference from last year, I think our ozone, our top like total goal scored is low relative to the league. Part of that is a product of we've won games, we've been in tight checking games, we kind of got off to an early start where you're a little bit of a front runner, where, you know, I felt like we were in playoff games third, fourth week of the year, you know, where it was tight checking and hard to get to places. And then, you know, it's not a forward group that, you know, has, you know, that high end guy that's going to break plays, where a couple of years ago we had, you know, at least two of those guys. And then we had a 30 goal scorer, 425 goal scorers, 520 goal scorers. You know, that's just not this team, or this forward group anyways. But we're generating a lot of chances compared to last year, where last year we would score a similar rate probably to this year, but we'd only generate 10 chances a night. You know, we just didn't have, you know, this forward group is certainly deeper, and, you know, it's maybe that finishing touch that doesn't come natural to them, but certainly our style of play has been more natural to them, and it's allowed us to generate a lot of chances. And you know, I'm glad they are, because otherwise we wouldn't be scoring less. So, you know, it's a little bit of that, you know, some of it takes time, some of it's chemistry. You know, you got to take a one-timer instead of a catch and release. And then sometimes it just takes the kids a little bit longer to learn that, where, you know, there's just little things that I can see on the bench, and you show on video every week and you break it down, and it just takes time. You know, can we get them there here quicker than not? Hopefully, but you can see it a little bit, you know, Sioux Falls, obviously, putting four goals in the back of the net, you know, and then the empty netter for the fifth one. You know, for us, we have the capability, we've seen it, you see it in practice. It's just, yeah, I mean, obviously you take the wins and all that stuff, but at the end of the day, we're still trying to develop these kids into better players long-term. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of room for improvement there, but, you know, we're close.
Very much so. As we're closing our conversation today, Coach, we always appreciate your time and gracious with us, and giving us probably a couple extra minutes than you're obligated to. You had mentioned how you guys are breaking on the 14th of December for Christmas. You guys don't return to the ice for a game at least till the 27th. So it's a two full week period there. How does your Christmas break work? Can some of the international guys get back home? Are they all staying domestic? How do you guys navigate that? And how many days do they truly get off to kind of decompress?
Yeah, I think the Christmas break at this age is so important for these kids. I think especially a young kid getting home, and you know, it's a grind where you can see with a young kid, they get home, they get a little bit of mom's home cooking, they come back like just refreshed and energized, and can have a really good second half for our imports. I think all of them are going home except one, and he chose to stay just because he was like, you know, by the time I get home, I sit down, I put my feet up, you know, I get a couple days and I got to turn around and come back, and it's expensive and whatever. So he's going to stay in North America, but he's going to travel to go visit some friends. But everybody else goes home. You know, you encourage them to at least bring their skates, if not their gear, get on the ice a little bit. Steph, our trainer, gives them some stuff to do as far as, you know, you get, yeah, I usually put in different tiers. You get a kid who goes home and wants to do a lot of stuff, and then you get some kids where it's like, hey, this is the minimum you're going to be able to do, as far as being able to come back and be in a condition to be able to play for us. So there are different tiers there where you don't want a kid going back, and you know, you still want them to mentally, you know, come back energized. But we'll be back the 26th. We usually practice in the evening that day so that the kids can travel, so that Christmas Day is, you know, still family time. And, you know, for us, it's an important time of year to be able to spend with your family. And obviously the hockey game on the 27th is going to be important when we're there. But, you know, in that that time of year, just taking your brain off hockey too, I think in the long term gives us, you know, a better chance to have a kid that's ready to go into the grind of the second half of the year.
Definitely. Well, hey, Coach, thanks for coming to your time. We're looking forward to watching you guys on the ice the next few days before Christmas. And you know what? We're hopefully going to get out to Shields Arena, what is it, next Thursday, Friday, when you guys take on Sioux City and Sioux Falls. So thank you for your time. Thank you for also enlightening us a little bit. I know Jace had a couple curiosities, and those were really great answers and filling us in as to kind of how you guys navigate those day-to-day things. So thank you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Of course. Happy holidays, guys. Talk to you soon.
Yep. Merry Christmas.